Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds, in under 30 releases since the last time we tried to release an episode, just less than a week ago. I'm Davey, your host, and with me I have Phil. How are you doing, Phil?
Hey, doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Just realized before we started recording that we still haven't covered Mad Mobs faction cards, so...
Yeah,
we're really keeping on top of things here.
Well, we are trying to lean a little bit towards, instead of giving that hottest of takes right as they come out, trying to get some reps in with them. So, well, for context, it is pre-order day for Kanan's Reapers. We've had our hands on them for a day or so, where we got to from GW a preview copy for the podcast so that we can try to bring you that content. And of course, everybody's been looking at the cards themselves for 5 or 6 days now. So that is where we're at. I was able to hand those off to you in person. So that's we'll jump ahead to what the heck is going on with you, because that's one of them, playing in person, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in terms of hobby, been on an offshoot for our other podcast, The Story Phase for the Mortal Realms. So we're doing a Soulblight Gravelords review soon. And as part of that, we got some Blood Knights from GW to review. So we each took one out of the box, and we've been doing a little painting competition and pretty much wrapped that up just yesterday. So that was pretty fun. Nice little change of pace. They're excellent models.
Yeah, you've had an enormous banner on yours. Really cool banner.
Yeah. I did myself a disservice and said, I'll take the banner bearer, and then immediately regretted my life decisions. But it's done enough now that I feel like it's presentable. So it's pretty cool. And in Underworlds, I got to play some more with Stalkers. That was our in-person game. I got beat by the Fire Slayers, which, you know, always feels good.
Yeah.
And then also got to try out the Kanan's Reapers, which was interesting, and played against Mad Mob. So, you know, getting the full gamut here.
Yeah. I've gotten to play a couple games with and against Mad Mob. I really like that warband a lot. We'll talk about that more when we kind of give more of a faction review of them. There's just a lot of different pieces, and it's pretty interesting. I actually was running a deck that you built for me, or built, and then I stole from you. So it was just it was a fun journey of discovery. And yeah, the Chosen Axes, I'll say in your defense, not only were your fighters cold-blooded, but your dice were as well. So
that's probably true.
There are a couple pivotal early rolls, and I had a pretty spectacular hand in the opening. I think I had Treasure Lust, Distraction,
Earth Shakes,
and Mischievous Spirits, as well as a relatively inconsequential upgrade, unless I'm forgetting. But basically, like, four incredible gambits for getting on or off objectives. Like, wow, all right, I will take it. So that was pretty fortunate. On the flip side, that is the one of the few things that the Chosen Axes bring to the table are some pretty amazing cards from in faction. So
yeah,
sometimes they get that way, I guess. But we haven't even mentioned the topic here. We're going to we're a little behind on covering universals. So what we've done is we're looking at the universals from the Mad Mob and Kanan Reapers releases. We're kind of clumping them together, picking the most notable. It's the usual where we say it's our favorites, and they may be our favorites for any number of reasons. They're just cards that we've picked off the pile that we think are discussion worthy. If you do want to get a blow-by-blow, there are a plethora of blogs and other content that have gone card-by-card through there. If you're listening to this, you yourself have probably gone card-by-card through there at this point. but anyway, so the cards we're talking about are ones that we think are particularly strong, that we think may adjust the meta, that we think are just interesting, or you have some other reason to chat about them. In that respect, I just wanted to make another shout out to Keep Chopping. They're the It's Bartosz's blog. He's been on the point, or he's been releasing steadily with as each thing comes out. I specifically want to call him out because as Kanan Reapers came out, they came out with an infaction, essentially an infaction keep chopping. So I, as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, I guess I got to give him the nod for that one. So
yeah,
there we go. And then I think he's probably got all his results back at this point, but Set the Tempo, Matt over at the Set the Tempo blog, he's got a poll out, which is actually something we're kicking around. You'll see one of those coming up from us before too much longer. You could help him out with guiding what kind of content that he would continue to work on. So if you get a chance and you haven't done so, go hop over there and help him fill that out. Last thing I'd say is you probably heard it on Path to Glory, but they are working on a Lone Star Open. So an in-person event in July, I believe, July of this year. You can go check them out for more details. I think it was the 23rd or 24th, but don't hold me to that. They're looking for, and the more early commits they can get, the better situation they can get with the venue and all that sort of thing. So if you feel safe doing that, and you can check out what measures they're taking, then consider it. Go check them out. Man, that little taste of in-person gaming you and I got me real excited for events coming up. So
yeah,
when they can happen again. I think Alex from Illinois was dropping a question on our Discord, probably a couple other places as well, asking when we think in-person events will be happening. I was like, man, not soon enough. So
yeah, it's rough. I mean, all of our local stores, like, they have to keep saying that they really want to, but like, they really have to consider that there's people who can't yet be vaccinated, and that makes things difficult for them. So
yeah.
And everybody's just gotta be a little bit more patient, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
It's soon.
Yeah. And I'm glad they're taking the responsible choice. Even for us, it was, you know, we were outside on a porch. Everybody was vaccinated, you know, so it felt good. And it was a nice sort of intermediate step. So, that's been going on for us. Did you have anything else you wanted to shout out at the community? I kind of ran away with the community shout outs there, but
no, you hit a lot of the big topics from the past week or so. So
yeah,
I think that's good.
Well, we are going to get into our main topic. So it's pretty simple here. It's our favorite universals from the last two sets. And we'll just go in the usual objectives, gambits, and upgrades. And Phil, why don't you start us off with one of your ones you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, so looking at our lists here, I do think we've got a number that are overlapped, but I will pick one of the ones that I chose that you didn't. And that is Lie in Wait. This is a end phase objective from the Mad Mob set, and it is a hybrid. You are scoring if you have three or more friendly hunters holding objectives, or you have two or more friendly fighters holding objectives, and each is a quarry. You do score two glory for this, so it's a hold two for two, which is, I think, okay, I guess I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. It's two glory for holding objectives, which is usually okay. If you go the hold three route, obviously playing supremacy would be better. But as a hold two, I think that this is pretty solid for being able to hold any two and get two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a quick thing about the wording here. The reason that the second part of this is worded strangely rather than just saying like hold two objectives with quarries is that they do make the caveat of or more, and all of the fighters holding have to be quarries. So if you happen to be holding three or more objectives and you only have two quarries, you still can't score this.
That's a really good pickup. I had not noticed that. So
that is something very important to keep in mind here. But if you are playing quarries, and I think we have a lot of good quarry tech now, that you can probably make this pretty easy.
Have you have you considered this for your stalkers?
I have considered it. I haven't put it in yet just because I think what I have now is easier to score.
Yeah.
And it's not a duel. If it was a duel, I would like it a lot better.
I see.
There's just not a lot of good duels.
Not helping the great plan.
Yeah, I'm having to save space for duels that I may like. I would like to take out Path to Victory because then I don't have to get a kill, but it's one of the easiest duels to score. So
sure.
I've been keeping it in.
Now, it's interesting. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think post rotation, this one definitely goes in.
Yeah, I see that. As well, I mean, alongside Path to Victory, right? Because Path to Victory is still going to be there. I think that's a really good parallel to draw because it's hold two with an additional caveat thing. And this Lie in Wait has the potential to be more passive, I guess, because you don't have to kill. So if you have a way of scoring passively with, you know, some surges, maybe a hidden purpose or something, and then you've got in faction quarry, and then, you know, heck, if you're using all your restricted in this hypothetical, then you put cryptic companion on somebody else, and so it really feeds into that. So pretty strong. That's a solid one. We actually, between us, we have a couple other quarry ones that we've tagged. Formidable Prey and Futile Hunt. Do you want to kick off Formidable Prey?
Yeah, so I like this one a lot. It's another end phase. This one's from the Kanan's Reaper set. So this is having one or more surviving friendly fighters each have two or more upgrades that give them the quarry keyword. So like two silent relics, for instance.
Yeah.
Or one or more surviving friendly fighters that each have a wounds characteristic of 6+ and are a quarry. So like, for Molog or one of the other big fighters, this is as simple as putting a silent relic on them and you just score it.
Yeah.
And for other warbands, if you're going to stack up quarry stuff anyway, this is another easy score. And there's very little that your opponent's going to be able to do about this. So, I mean, it's always nice having those passive scores where you can kind of just bank on having certain glory,
sure,
kind of no matter what.
It's one of those where the art matches too. You got Kanan just being like, yeah, I'm a quarry, what of it?
And, yeah.
And actually it's worth noting, like, this is the first time we started seeing the Ideneth, the Soul Hunt,
Soul Hunt or yeah. Soul
seeing them raid. on the card art, which was pretty fun. So
yeah, makes me wonder if Kanan's Reapers and the Soul Raid were supposed to Soul come Raid out together.
I'm sure. I mean, in previous seasons, that would have absolutely been the case. I think in Beastgrave, the Grimwatch and Snarlfangs got split up for some weird production or shipping reason. But, who knows whether they'll stick with this or stick with the two. I guess that's a whole nother topic, but aside, which do you think you prefer, two at a time or the one and one and one and one?
I think I like one at a time, but I would like to see them spaced out more.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Getting them 3 weeks apart or whatever it's been lately, it's like, well, at this point you might as well just release two and then wait longer. But
yeah. It's fun. I mean, not to get too, like, the card pool feels like it's changing so much that I'm building decks and I will realize, I mean, it's a fun environment to be in where I realize after the fact, I'm like, I can't believe, you know, like, I think there's a card we'll talk about later that is just a purely bitter sidestep. And I was like, oh, I'm still putting sidestep in my deck. And I've totally forgotten that I have Heated Instinct. I think it's called out there. Yeah. I could be doing that. So anyway. Those are all asides, but yeah, I think, it's been cool to see it in a different light. And I think I'm happy for new releases, however they come, but yeah. Definitely. Well, the other one I was mentioning was a Futile Hunt, and this is actually, a surge, also a hybrid, score immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action in which they take an enemy fighter out of action. If that friendly fighter is a quarry or the target had one or more hunger counters. So a one glory surge for a kill is pretty great. Like if you feel confident that you're going to have a quarry. So if you built your deck in a particular way, which is getting easier and easier, then this is great. Cause most of them have, this will happen, but there's there's restrictions. Like some of the most powerful surges we've seen in the past, including ones that got restricted, would have been like advancing strike, defensive strike, if we're looking all the way back to season one. You still see a sort of hunter version of that with Brought to Bay, that are quite powerful, if that's the way you're going. And the hunger thing, that's almost, it's, I mean, against vampires, it'll probably happen. You know, it's unlikely to drop. You certainly wouldn't build towards that. You may incidentally do it. Like if you got, energy drain,
yep.
splashes out some hunger, you may, get that, but just the fact that that piece is on there, turning this into a hybrid, then helps unlock like, adaptive strategy. So, things like that.
Yeah.
So, which again, in the deck that Phil built and I used, I carried, adaptive strategy through the whole game, and he had so many easy hybrids in there that I was able to just kind of carry it in my back pocket and then essentially operate with two objectives, in my hand at any one time and still scored it at the end, with cards to spare. So a lot of good hybrids out there, not so much on the duels.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a numbers disparity too.
Yeah.
You just get more hybrids, which actually doesn't quite make sense to me, because hybrids are inherently easier because it's two different conditions rather than two conditions you have to satisfy.
Yeah. So, I mean, but they recognize it to some extent, right? Because,
right.
What's the strategy for meticulous strategy? Only needs three duels to score. So
yeah, that's true.
Another surge for getting a kill basically is Primal Display. Surge duel. Score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action if the attack action took the target out of action and you have the primacy token. So I bring this up for two reasons. One, it's strong for aggro. It's strong for Mad Mob, especially, who are going to get primacy on any kill. I bring it up also because it kind of highlights just how bad we need an FAQ, because right now it is not entirely clear when the primacy is gained. The standard things that happen is you complete your super action, and after that, the activation is over. Then inspirations happen. So if there is any inspiration condition that happened during that action, now anyone who should inspire will inspire. Then reactions that happen after activation or after action, if it's, you know, the last action, then those can trigger, and then objectives will score. It's probably safe to assume that the primacy happens. Primacy is picked up before you get to the objective scoring, but it's not explicit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I think, I mean, if you just think about where the timing of the rules sort of would make sense, since it's saying when you take a fighter out of action in one hit, you just assume that it's a after activation trigger.
Yeah.
And it just happens. But there's nothing to indicate one way or the other,
and which makes... Yeah. It's pretty important to figure out, is it happening before inspiration or after? Is it happening before reactions or after?
Yeah.
There's a lot of cards that are important as far as that goes.
Yeah, there's a few other cards we'll probably mention later here that rely on that timing of when do you get the primacy token. So, GW, if you're listening.
You have Primal Assertion down. I'm going to be honest, I don't have it up and I cannot remember what it does. So why don't you educate me on that one?
Yeah, so this is I don't know, this is maybe not the best, but I kind of like it. So this is a score immediately after you discard the primacy token if your warband holds more objectives than any other warband.
Okay.
So if you have ways of messing with primacy and you're planning on and I mean, I guess the nice thing about any of these, whether it be dominant position or whatever, for holding more is that you can kind of, like, especially if you get this early, you could hold one and score this. And there are a number of decent cards now for discarding primacy. But of course, the question is, do you really want to discard primacy? But I think there's now enough tech to mess with getting and removing primacy that this suddenly becomes something that you can score just by playing cards and positioning, which is personally how I prefer to get my glory. But I just think it's interesting. I do think this one maybe makes more sense for Mad Mob than anybody else, but I think there's the potential there for anybody to use it.
Yeah, and this is because the score is on the discard. This has that rare situation. We talked about this with another objective where you can score it in that weird like after. So you could have drawn into it in the end phase. Yeah, and you can get there that way. The other one is for having an objective in enemy territory. So there you only have to be sitting on one that's perhaps more dangerous, but only the one. This has the weird duality of like, if you're a warband that is likely to be standing on more, then you are more likely to have given it up, you know, like if you're ghouls or some such ghosts or something like that. So it almost feels like the of the two, the other one might be a little more grabbable. But I definitely was looking at this going back to the Mad Mob deck you'd built. It involved holding objectives and getting into enemy territory, and you know, potentially you might have killed people off of where they were. So I think it's an interesting spot. I think Supreme Confidence is the other one. Discard the primacy token.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I'm not 100% sure.
Anyway, there's, as we'll see as we get a little further in, there are a lot of ways to. I remember early in the season, you and I were talking like, ooh, feign strength, feign weakness. Like, wouldn't it be cool if there were a lot of ways to manipulate or benefit from the primacy token? Well, we got that.
Yep.
So I think I remember on first pass through the cards in these sets, looking at cards like this and at cards that actually manipulate the primacy and being like, whoa, man, I am not, it felt like there were so many moving pieces. I was like, it's going to take me a little while to kind of process or to put the pieces together on what might work well together.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I had one more surge that I wanted to mention. And this is Perfect Strike. This is score this immediately after a friendly fighter's attack action that took an enemy fighter out of action. If the attack roll contained only successes and or critical successes and the attack action dealt the precise amount of damage necessary to take the target out of action. It's two glory, which is a real big deal for a surge. It's dual, which by the rules we've established so far means it's probably hard to score. this was less of a, this is a powerful card and more of a me trying to think about like what warband could possibly like what warband is going to want this. And so I think the warbands that are looking for this are ones that have rerolls, right? Because if you're giving yourself rerolls instead of adding dice, that helps. If your attacks are on smash rather than fury, that's a big deal because you're more likely to end up with an attack roll with all successes. And then one either with a varied amount, or I was thinking even with like Thundrix. Thundrix does a lot of attacking on smash between Thundrix and Deadeye and Draxcure. And because often they're doing like just one or two with those shots, then you're more likely to be finishing somebody off with exactly that amount. So I still don't think it's there, but I think there may be like if you build with the right amount of rerolls and the right warband, this may be something you take.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I personally think that the card art is actually accurate this time, and that Kanan's Reapers probably like this the best because if you get double supports and you're on smash, your 5/6 of the results could be successes.
That's a really good point, and
so that at least gets you. half the way there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and they do a lot of their, I think they do a lot of their kills by stacking up multiple attacks. So you kind of get, yeah. I felt, yeah, I wonder. I didn't even think about the support side. That's a good point.
Yeah. And they actually even have a few sort of varied damage levels. So like if you know you need to get one, you've got fighters that do one. If you know you need two, you've got fighters who base do two. And then you can go three or four or crazy land more if you've got Kanan, because yeah. he can pretty well manipulate his damage into the stratosphere. So
yeah, I can.
Yeah, maybe they can pull this off, but it still feels, to me, it feels like something you're not going to be able to bank on happening.
Yeah. I guess thinking about it, like with steady aim in Thundrix, that's a card. Some people take that. I think I've included it once or twice, and just I've had to bail on it in the past. Like, just felt like sometimes it would just sit in your hand forever. Yeah. That on its own felt like a harder to trigger branching fate, and branching fate can sometimes stagnate a little bit too. So
yeah, so is the life of the aggro player who yeah. relies on dice. But right. you know, for two glory, maybe it's worth it. I don't know.
Sure, depends how desperate you get. did you have any other surges? You're on end phase now.
I just end phase. I really only was interested in Primal Assertion as a surge. I mean, there was a few others that I thought seemed good, but most of them just didn't really jive with how I tend to build decks, so I didn't include them. So I guess I can kick us off here on some more end phase stuff.
Yeah, go for it.
So one that we had both actually included here, and one that I was mostly including just because I was glad to see some scraps thrown their way, is Myriad Incantations and helping out the spellcasters, because this is a score this in an end phase. If there are more Gambit spells in your discard pile than in each opponent's discard pile. So if you're playing spells, this is probably almost a guaranteed score, just because there's not that many people doing it.
Yeah, so few out there.
So obviously Stormsire loves this. It's guaranteed glory. But I don't know. I don't know if anyone else would really lean into this, but if they keep printing more stuff for Wizards, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd know better than I do if the in-faction Eyes of the Nine objectives would support, you know, leaning into that more. That's obviously risky, but
I don't think so. So the problem that I have with the in-faction Eyes of the Nine stuff is a lot of it's tied to damage dealt by spells.
Mm.
So it's not just, you can't be like Stormsire and just sit around and be like, I'm just going to cast spells. You actually have to both cast them and do damage with them. So it makes it tough.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But they do have some for just like having cast a certain number of spells. I don't remember what the number is. I feel like I want to say it's four spells in a round, which is a lot. So maybe like if you really want to go nuts, but
yeah. What caught my eye about this one is that it specifically leans into the spell casting, but the spell casting that is, it'll reward you for casting spells and being passive, right? Like there was a time where Cursebreaker could sit at the back of the board while his two buddies empowered, and he cast spells to shuffle people around and that sort of thing. This will do that. Like this is a risk-free, right? Like you can be casting spells that don't put you in harm's way. So, I mean, it feels silly to talk so much about a one glory end phase objective, but it's the sort of thing that makes me, every time I see something like this, I said, okay, like add that one to the pile of cards that I'm going to think about when I get around to trying out Curse Breakers again. So
yeah. Yep. I mean it's one tool, but one very reliable tool can be the thing that suddenly unlocks enough of a deck to make it consistent. So I don't think we expect anyone to be running this soon, but I think it's a keep your eyes here. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll see a resurgence of Curse Breakers or Mayari casts. Okay.
Yeah.
Could see them, or maybe even Duval.
Yeah. And then it's tough. Like there's no way that, Kagra should be leaning any more into Ryu and Zarsha than, but that being said, the two Gambit spells she has are hot fire. So I don't know if you're a real risk taker. But one that they're pictured on, I think, but don't particularly like is Wasteland. I think you had that flagged.
Yeah. So this is a card that you only ever play if you're doing Feed the Beast Grave. But if you're doing Feed the Beast Grave, you love this. So it's you score this in an end phase if there are no objective tokens in one or more players' territories. So if you know you're playing this and you know you're doing Feed the Beast Grave, you could even set up the board in such a way that you flip one token and you can score this by putting one of yours in yours, one in no man's land, and then the rest in your opponent's territory. But even if you have multiple in your territory and you're doing Feed the Beast Grave, that like you're going to end up in this situation at some point. So if you're, I don't know, like I almost don't want them to be rewarding Feed the Beast Grave, because if you start to get enough other objectives that you can score for flipping, suddenly it becomes too easy and you're gonna have a crazy runaway amount of glory for just like sitting around flipping objectives,
right
and potentially denying glory for your opponent in the process,
right?
So while I like this and I like Feed the Beast Grave as an idea, I am a little apprehensive, so hopefully that'll be the last one we see of this.
Sure. And then,
as we mentioned before recording, Feed the Beast Grave's probably got, what, at most 5 months left?
Yeah, something like that. It'd be interesting what they decide to do with Season 5, with the way Season 4 got delayed. But yeah. Fair.
Yeah, so that was my last one. I think you have just one more on your list as well.
I do. Tale of Victory I put on here, and I put this on here for two reasons. One is just a shout out. If you look at this and you think it's amazing, you need to read it again. I did the same thing, so I'm not shaming anyone who's done this. It's a score this in the third end phase if each surviving fighter is a friendly hunter. If you don't read that carefully, you think, oh, all I have to do is have all my fighters that are alive be hunters. That's an easy six glory. But this is annihilation plus an extra glory plus you have to have somebody alive and that person has to be a friendly hunter. So it's not as good as, if you think it's amazing, you need to read it again. But the other reason I put it in here is the quote in the picture.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. The only thing taller than the prey the orcs hunt is the tales they tell each other afterwards. And I'm not exactly sure if who I'm looking at here. It might be Wallop, but like, he's just like, you guys, it was this big, you know, like,
yeah.
I'm just telling about how he totally knocked down Kanan or something. I don't know. You know, like, so pretty great.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like, in terms of actually playing this card, it'd be super risky, but like, I feel like there've been a number of games recently where it's come down to just a couple fighters left in the end. I think maybe because aggro is in such a place right now that like even annihilation doesn't feel entirely out of reach. So, I mean, it's probably not reliable enough. You probably don't actually want to try and do this, but like six glory, that's a pretty big deal. So
yeah,
maybe. It reminds me a little bit of the what was that one that came in the, like, I think it was in the
leaders pack, Magor.
Leader pack for the Magor
has to be the only living person at the end, score eight glory.
Yeah. I think the highest scoring end phase card in the entire game.
Yep.
Like, you'll never do it, but man, if you ever did.
it's so insane. Yeah. I think every time I make a Magor's deck, I just spend a little while looking at it. I'm like, I know I'm not going to put this in, but I need to look at it for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those pips.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day of Shard Gale, I was like, maybe
you could do it.
You got any other follow-up on objectives, or should we move on to gambits here?
Yeah, let's talk some gambits.
All right. I've got a much longer list than you somehow here. You do. So I will hit one up. And since we just talked about one that I enjoyed for the card art and the quote, I will do that for my first one here. This is Mazig's Machinations. Gambit spell, single focus. If cast, pick one, flip each feature token within two hexes of the caster or one feature token in no one's territory or one opponent's territory. So there's a lot of options there. Like, that's pretty flexible. So if you are obviously not Hrothgorn, but still trying for Feed the Beast Grave, I think I talked some about like trying to do this with Zarbags or something like that. This is actually pretty flexible for that sort of thing. Because it has the flexibility to get multiples if you manage to stand. Like, you can stand in a spot that is within two of as many as three, I think. I haven't mapped it out. I know you could do it with three. I don't know that you could do it with more than that. You could flip a lot of tokens with this, with the right positioning. But being able to just grab one from forever away, like no one's territory or one opponent's territory, if they got one hidden at the back. I mean, sometimes that's the main obstacle in the path of actually scoring Feed the Beast Grave is, like, they've got one hidden in the back corner. How am I going to get somebody over there with the resources to do it? And this is that. All that said, I flagged this because it's got, the quote is, oops, Zarshia Bittersoul. And I was like, what do you mean, oops? And then I'm looking at it and like, oh, she is flipping an objective underneath Kagra. So
yep.
Kagra's like, I'm going to despoil this objective here, desecrate this objective. And, her sister is just like really sticking it to her. So I was like, oh. I love that it's a game that has so many, like, you know, gamey decisions and all that sort of thing, but they still got some room for like cool art, and a sense of humor and, you know, character within it. That's great. Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. All right. So I burned one of my picks on funny art and talking more about Feed the Beast Grave, but, how about you throw one at me?
Yeah. So one that I really like, and this is another one that is tied to primacy, which we have talked previously about how there's a lot of different things you can do with primacy now with power cards, and that's untapped resources. Mm. So this is one that you can only play if your warband holds two or more objectives. So it's not very easy. You do have to set up for it, but if you have that situation, you can spend a glory point to gain the primacy token. So just for free, just get it whenever you want, or discard the primacy token if you already have it, and then you get to draw three power cards.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously I picked this one partially because of Primal Assertion. They kind of can go together. But there's other things you can do with this too. But if you need to be able to give and take the primacy token at will, this card gives you the means to do both. And since it's also draw tech, I think it's actually a very good card that, if you can make a plan around when you need to use it and how you need to use it, it should be game-changingly strong.
Yeah, I think both sides of that are pretty powerful. I think if you're a warband that likes holding a lot of objectives, then you're scoring surge off of those, be it, you know, in the name of the king or temporary victory or even just hidden purpose or something like that. So then you're getting the glory on the fly. You can hold this card until the very end of that.
Hmm.
And then spend one to get one, and they'll both be like spent glory.
Yeah.
But if you're playing against somebody who cares a lot about primacy, you could brick a number of things like Awesome Predator or things that rely on having. I mean, there's actually quite a few objective cards now that say, you know, either have just, you know, the only part of it is said have primacy as one half of the hybrid, or as a duel, it says, you know, do these be in enemy territory with all your fighters and have primacy, or have killed this many fighters and have primacy. So this is a great way, I think potentially a great way for those horde war bands that are holding objectives to brick. And they do sometimes score primacy when you counterpunch with some of your heavy hitters. So, you know, the Duke Crackmarrow comes out and smokes somebody, get primacy. Well, dropping that for three cards is pretty hot, right? So
yeah, especially if you feel like you have another way to get it again. So,
mm-hmm. And then even for I think in the revamp of the deck you were building, you put this into the Mad Mob.
I did,
which is a pretty nifty way, because they holding two can sometimes be a little tricky for them. But if you're building that way, that's something. And they love ways to either pick up primacy or spend it. And this is both those things, which is a great card for them, I think.
Yeah,
potentially.
And just one other thing that I like to think about that I've not been thinking about enough till now is that anything that you can do to gain primacy, if you're taking it away from your opponent, you have to think about it as an extra glory swing because you're also taking one away from your opponent. So in this situation, yeah, you're spending one, but the net effect is going to be two if you're doing it at the right time. So I just think that that's something to keep in mind, the math of how that actually plays out. It's not spend one to get one. It's spend one to deny one and get one.
So. Yeah. 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 It's the daylight robbery effect, right?
Yep. Yep. So I think that one's very good.
Yeah. You were wise for including it, and so did I.
Do you have anything else with primacy while we're on the topic?
I don't think I do.
I have primal power, right?
So primal power is reroll one dice in your warband's next casting roll. In addition, if you have the primacy token, roll one extra dice in that roll. This effect persists until your warband's next attempt to cast a spell. So there's several things going on here, which you may be able to build towards multiple pieces of it. Just a straight reroll in a warband's casting roll. A reroll is kind of like an extra dice. And so it's, you know, if you think of it in the terms, you know, it can be used for a spell attack action. So, you can think of it a little bit like a determined effort, but just for your spell caster, in which case it'd be, you know, a little on the weak side. Other than, you know, sometimes a reroll is better than extra dice as far as casting, cause you can protect against, backlash if you double crit, protect yourself from that. So you can roll out of one of those bad situations, but having primacy, adding a casting dice. So like a reroll can really unlock some of the double channels, or even double focus. But adding a dice and rerolling, a lot of spells all of a sudden become like, well, that's totally like doable. Now, I don't know if you start including those, I don't know if you start including the spells just on the back of this and hoping that you can combo those, but if you have more resources that you can stack into that. So if you do have a faction innate channel, Fecula she has her, Wretchling, which can turn something into a channel. So all of a sudden, like, she is in a position where she can actually get off those double channels, a little more reliably, the more of things that you can slide into that, the better. So, if you are going that magic strategy, this has a big chance of, kind of boosting your possibilities. And it's the same thing I've talked about before where I like that it has a thing like, hey, if you have primacy, it does this really good thing. If you don't, it still does a thing. Like, it's not dead.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. It's not a dead card in your hand. You can still use it if you just need to get cards out.
Yeah. And if nothing else, you could have this, and if you have the objective for having a persisting gambit at the end of the round, like if yeah. nothing else, you could drop that to get your if this is what you needed to get one glory for just being hanging out in the back, then that can be worth it. So
yeah. And I mean, and maybe people already connected these dots, but I mean, it's a casting roll. So any spell attack actions are also a casting roll. So if you just need to make an attack more accurate, that's also an option. Like, I know it chains well with other gambit spells, but maybe you don't have one, but sure. you want to play this anyway. So
sure. Yeah. I mean, if you can trigger this with primacy in hand, then giving yourself an attack action that has an extra dice and a reroll above and beyond whatever else you got on there. That's big
pretty
time.
Pretty juicy.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking like, you know, the old, so like, vindictive attack, sort of things, you know, go with, Snarlfangs. I'm thinking Haymaker. I'm thinking Haymaker with no downside. You know, it's almost right. Here's a few extra dice. So, yeah. That's Primal Power. Did you have another one that you wanted to cover?
Yeah, so I've got a couple. So the last two that I've got here are ones that are on your list as well. So I'll start with Cunning Paths because I think this is a good one, just generally. But then also, if you're playing Feed the Beast Grave, I think it's extra good. So this is a ploy where you get to pick one effect. So either you can give +1 move to friendly fighters in the next activation. So if for some reason you had a way of moving multiple fighters, like with goblins or with Kanan's Reapers, getting +1 move.
Sepulchral Guard.
Yep. So if you have ways of stacking that can become really strong. Or you can choose that each time a quarry moves into a hex that contains a feature token in the next activation, you can flip that feature token. Like this can be good even if you're not playing Feed the Beast Grave, if you just need to deny some glory from somebody, or if you just need a way to get one back maybe that's already been flipped. But if you're playing Feed the Beast Grave, this is insane because it's just each time you enter the hex.
Yeah.
It's not like end there or anything like that. So if you have a way of having a fast quarry where you can like run through two or three hexes in a single move, you could flip all of them.
Yeah. I've seen some combos laid out that are pretty gross.
Yeah. So, I guess keep an eye out for more Feed the Beast Grave decks. Also like, I don't know, like there's just going to be some weird stuff that people can do with some of these cards. And I don't even know that we've had enough time yet for people to really sit down and figure out what those weird things are, but this one feels like it's got some legs.
I wonder if it, like you said, like it can be defensive, like if you're somebody who cares about holding a certain number of objectives or something like that, you know, if your opponent is not feeding the Beast Grave, then the +1 move can be potentially, you know, useful for getting you further, and you may have, like we talked about, the ability to move multiple fighters in a given turn, and then have the flexibility of somebody I may have upgraded to a quarry can then flip them back potential. So I wonder, depending on how prevalent Feed the Beast Grave becomes, whether this kind of like Symbiote's Call, I think. Starts to play into more of those. I mean, I'm thinking specifically of Sepulchral Guard for some reason, but you know, ghouls or something like that may take this as a not quite as good as they could have, but with the insurance side of things on it. So,
yeah,
because those decks are often going to include quarry things like Formidable Defense and Cryptic Companion and that sort of thing, where they benefit from being on objectives.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. And this is a bit of an aside, so we can probably leave it be if you want. But I just feel like suddenly Quarry has really come into its own. And
yeah, oh, 100%. You
could really make a lot of decks that focus specifically on Quarries and probably have a pretty good deck.
Yeah.
So I don't know who does that best. Probably some of the innate Quarry warbands, but
which, yeah, so Stalkers and Dread Pageant. I currently have a draft Dread Pageant deck over in my Underworlds DB saved things where I'm trying to work up a full all Quarries sort of deck.
Yeah. So, I like it.
Yeah. I flagged a ton, but I'm going to back off a couple of them.
Sure.
I definitely want to talk about Eternal Chase. So this is each fighter's move characteristic is 4 and cannot be modified further. Each fighter is a hunter and each fighter is a quarry. This effect persists until the end of the round. So this is hunting season with the added, I was going to say benefit, but we'll say added caveat that everyone is locked in at 4 move, which is pretty speedy. I think that first piece, the move 4 piece, certain warbands really appreciate that. I think even Kanan's, right? Like, because they yeah, can get no, so many people
they would
moving.
Love that.
Yeah. You think like, well, it's really just plus 1 move, but it goes for the entire round, and they are regularly going to move every fighter in their warband in a given round. So if you say my whole warband has plus 1 move, all right.
Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned Sepulchral Guard just a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Make all the little 2-speed guys 4-speed. That's a big, pretty big deal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, totally. Because they get multiple moves, and all of a sudden your threat range on your actual fighter guys. Like if I'm looking at the champion and saying, oh gosh, this guy can go 4 and smoke me. Yeah. Like, so big deal there. And then, Chosen Axes wouldn't say no to doubling their move pre-inspire or even post-inspire getting the plus 1. So, really cool there. And another aspect of it is that it's got a little bit of counterplay. If you can tell that somebody's setting up for a big, like I'm going to score myself a cover ground or gathered momentum or the other part of the speed package. Winged Death. So clever play from this can deny that. Those have been you're right. Exactly. Those have been as automatic as it gets for the longest time, right? Like,
yep.
The warbands that can score those just kind of score them, if the cards come out. So it's really awesome to see counterplay. And, if you are leaning into the whole quarry thing, like we were talking about the quarry, gameplay. We talked about some of those, like the if you're a quarry and you take somebody out of action, this even unlocks the, was it the Hunter's Hunted or Tables Turned or something like that, where yeah. Quarry takes out a hunter. That's a 2 glory surge like that. That is huge. So, super cool card. Does not, you know, you don't look at it and say like, oh, this thing's busted. So I'm pretty pumped about this one.
It's definitely a good card. And I guess the only other thing that I thought about with it is that there's a lot of times with slower warbands, or even I guess mid-speed warbands, where they're using things like tracking or spectral wings just so they can make those like long dive charges so that they can get stuff going.
Yeah.
And if you can play this and just be like, well, now you're too far away to get to any of my fighters this round, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
That is some hard shutdown of some aggro stuff. So
protect that back line.
Yeah. It's very, very flexible card. Yeah.
And any card that is real strong for, or real strong, real attractive to a Sepulchral Guard and Chosen Axes is a great card in my mind. So, like I said, I've got other cards flagged. I think the only other one I wanted to mention just for weirdness is Carnivore's All. And this is starting with you, each player can choose one or more fighters from their warband, give each fighter one hunger counter. Each fighter with 2 or more hunger counters is a hunter. This effect persists until the end of the round. So this is a card that just on the side, as Skaven can just, Spyclaw Swarm can just say, okay, my whole warband's inspired. That being said, I still don't know if you take it in Spyclaw. Like, I don't know if it matters enough to get, you know, like some of them, it's really nice to get Scritch inspired. It's really nice. You know, some of them individually are great to get inspired, but you know, some of you kind of don't care all that much. Like Lurking Skaven doesn't matter all that much. I don't know if you'd rather, cause like giving your fighters hunger, like whatever, making them hunters, those seem such like peripheral benefits. I still think this has like a lot of competition from something like Musk of Fear, which is just pick one, but they go on guard because popping somebody two defense dice on guard from one defense dice on dodge is a really big deal. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. I think it got a lot of people like, whoa, like, but
it's for your whole warband, but it doesn't do anything else.
Yeah, exactly. Like, is that worth it? I don't know. So I'd be interested if you are a diehard Spyclaw Swarm player. Are you including this, or did it not make the cut? Let us know. So,
yeah, I guess also as just a quick aside, I remember people were talking about this in the Vassal Discord, and, John from Can You Roll Crit was, saying like, wait, what? And like, hadn't looked at it yet. And he's like, that wasn't supposed to end up that way. So, it sounds like the playtesters realized that was, potentially a strong side effect of this card and had thought that it shouldn't end up that way. And yet it did. So here we are.
Hats off to their templating though, because you can look at this and like the word choose is bolded. So like choose, give, hunter, and persist are bolded on this card. Like they're making good strides towards making some of these cards pretty clear. So
Making some stuff super clear, and then other rules just weren't printed in the rule book at all and are not part of the sequencing rules. So, you know, credit where credit is due, but some things could still be improved.
That's true. All right, upgrades. I am going to dive right in. I'm going to pick an upgrade. Well,
I think before I did have one more that I wanted to talk about. And I think we maybe kind of mentioned it in passing. And that is just Heated Instinct.
Oh yes.
Cause you had mentioned it's like a sidestep that's just inherently better. And it also is some of this quarry stuff, but this is literally, it's just, it's sidestep, or if you have a quarry, it's two move sidestep.
So yeah.
Not a lot to say about it other than that. If you're thinking that sidestep is good, why not take Heated Instinct?
I mean, two spaces, two hexes is spectacular.
Yeah.
Like, so good. So 100%. And it's a rare deck that doesn't have any upgrades at turn. Even if you don't have, even if you're not, Starblood Stalkers or Dread Pageant, and don't have an innate quarry in your warband, it's a rare deck that doesn't have any upgrades that turn somebody into a quarry. I already really highly rated sidestep. And if you are strictly better than sidestep, then hats off to you, sir. I'm a little surprised there wasn't, they didn't find a way to engineer some like trade off, or it was like, make it away from the closest enemy, or I don't know,
or towards the closest,
so right like choose some, direction. Like that would have restricted a little. I don't think it's busted. You don't see sidestep in every single deck, and that's cool. I think it's a fine card to be very strong, and that will rotate out.
All right, back to those upgrades that you wanted to talk about.
Tasty upgrades. We talked a lot about primacy, and let's just do this now. We got Primal Lunge. So this is an upgrade reaction after an activation. Discard the primacy token. If you do, this fighter makes one move action or attack action, then discard this card. Wow. Super powerful, right? Like, it has ready for action vibes all over it.
Yep.
Ready for action, if you weren't around, was a reaction to playing an upgrade on somebody. Once you reacted to playing your upgrade, you got to make a move or an attack. And the stealth tech on that was always that the move was sometimes as powerful or more so than the attack action.
Yeah.
but really saucy, especially if you can, if you're a warband that can really get the primacy a lot. Mad Mob.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. What do you think? Are you, give me your hot take on Primal Lunge.
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I've seen reading this card, because obviously like getting to make an out of sequence move or attack action is strong. But the thing that I like the most about it is that it's specifically after an activation.
Yeah.
It could be anybody's activation. And so not only is this going to give you like, so you could use this after your activation to get another attack or another move, but getting to do it in response to something that your opponent does is also probably going to catch them off guard, especially if it's like they did a thing and then all of a sudden you move a fighter somewhere else before your activation for your normal turn. So like you could move in a fighter with Scything or something and be ready to go for that attack and then be positioned to do more. Or like you could move them off onto an objective and then someone else could move onto an objective in your turn. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're holding two and you only took you one activation. I don't know. This is going to be all over the place. People are going to use this for tons of stuff and it's going to be super strong and super flexible. And it should probably be restricted right away, but obviously it won't be.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it is a, like, you have to get rid of this upgrade after you do this, because if you could do this every single time,
it would be insane. Forsaken. Yeah. So here's the things I like about it. I like that it is a little bit slower than Ready for Action was, right? Because it already has to be out. Ready for Action was, does my opponent have one unspent glory on the table? They do. Okay. They might have another action that I'm not. This at least has a one round delay on that. They're going to put it out and then you have one activation or end the rest of that current power step to try to do something about it. Mm-hmm. So slower. Yep. And then it also has the primacy, and for as reliable as it sometimes feel to get the primacy, there've been plenty of times, and I've played a lot of games where, you know, the primacy counter was very important. Either I wanted my opponent to have it because I was trying to score underdog with my Reavers, or, you know, I, in the game you and I played where I was playing the Mad Mob, I had actually a hard time keeping track of where it was. I started assuming that I always had it, and that was not true. you know, and because you often want to spend it, in a warband that is likely to have it, you also have effects that are willing to spend it or discard it or get rid of it. So my instinct is that this is an incredibly strong card, with the underlying that, like, actually maybe, you know, like maybe this is, it'd be interesting. It'd be interesting to see if it's as strong as it looks right away. Cause it may not be.
Yeah. It might be hard to time it right. But, yeah. I don't know. Just a free attack or a free move can sometimes be so backbreaking when you weren't expecting it.
And this is another one that the timing of when primacy is earned is extremely important, because get primacy before reactions, this can be, hey, I'm Kanan, I charged in, killed somebody with my crazy big axe, and then do I get primacy right away from that and then can react and spend it right away? So now I'm getting two actions, you know?
Oh boy.
Yeah, exactly. So the timing of exactly when primacy happens is a big deal for this. Anyway,
very
lot to talk about on that one for good reason. I think that is a potentially meta defining. I mean, that is a card that we're going to see for a long time until it rotates out.
I definitely agree.
Yeah. I guess I grabbed that right away and you only had a handful here, but why don't you fine. Throw one at us? So.
So I guess I will go to Inured by Hunger. I know that hunger as a mechanic is something that's not used by a lot of warbands, and by not by a lot, I mean, basically only one, maybe a little bit with some Molog stuff. But I think this is pretty good, especially if you're just trying to do like turtle vampires. So this is an upgrade that gives you a reaction where you can use this during an attack action that targets the fighter after the determined success step. So obviously, once you realize that you're going to get hit, you can then do this. And if you do, you have to remove all of the fighter's hunger counters. And if you do that, you are going to then reduce the damage dealt to this fighter from that attack action by the number of counters removed to a minimum of one.
Mm.
Anything that gives you the option to reduce damage by more than one, I think, is pretty insane.
Yeah.
But even just like upgrades that are just a flat reduce damage by one, we've seen get restricted because it's so powerful.
Yeah.
So this is a way to just have that on your vampires pretty much always.
Yep.
And even for other warbands that don't use hunger as consistently, like getting one hunger counter here and there is probably not even that hard.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that does it now. So, yeah, we know that damage reduction is super powerful. So this is like damage reduction on steroids.
Yeah. And, I mean, it is a huge, it feels, you know, like the crush's ability to like just draw damage down a ton. This is repeatable. So if you can stack hunger back on this fighter, which there's 100% ways to, there's like hunger siphon and different things like that, where you can have a fighter pick hunger back up. What I like about this, and again, like you mentioned, there's not that many people looking at this, almost nobody other than the Crimson Court. But including this in the Crimson Court, a lot of times if you are building towards a style that that wants to have hunger, then a lot of your objectives are saying like, hey, like I want hunger on this many people, or I want this many hunger counters out there. And this actually works counter to that. So this is a really powerful ability, which is a little bit counterintuitive or has some anti-synergy with a lot of the objectives that you're probably really looking hard at. And I think that makes this a real interesting choice for a warband like the Crimson Court. I think it maybe plays into that style where you are trying to do the flexible thing, where like I'm going to have some bloodlusted and some inspired and mm-hmm. go from there. So really cool card, really cool spot, and really one that make you think real hard about it during deck building. So really like that. Good choice.
Yeah. So I see you've got another one here that's around hunger. Do you want to talk about that one?
Yeah. So hunger for success. After each activation in which this fighter made one or more attack actions, give this fighter one hunger counter, and then reaction after this fighter's attack action, remove three of this fighter's hunger counters. If you do, this fighter makes an attack action. If that attack action fails, deal one damage to this fighter. So same sort of thing where, so having three is a lot, right? Like,
yeah.
Even for vampires, that's a little bit of a tall order. But having the ability to re-attack is kind of a big deal. And this one, this is another one where the timing is going to need an FAQ, because let's say you have two hunger counters after each activation in which this fighter made one or more attack actions. So let's say you have two hunger counters, you attack. So I should gain a hunger counter. What happens first? Do I gain that hunger counter first, or do I have to react first? And that really changes the value of this card. I think you probably gain it before you have to react, but I don't know. Like it's not clear.
I mean, they're kind of in the same window, so it's tough.
I think it's a pretty well balanced card. If you are somebody who is really piling on the hunger, then all of a sudden you can potentially trigger this more than once. This card is likely to only go off once in a game. But one card for one power card for one extra attack action is often worth it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good. And even if you're just putting this in a Crimson Court hunger deck, having a way to just guarantee that you get more hunger counters is valuable in and of itself. So, I think Crimson Court probably run this, whether they use the reaction or not.
Sure. So, oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Seems decent.
Yeah. Especially somebody like Gorath, who's going to be more likely to make multiple activations in which he makes an attack because he's got their range too.
So. And like pair this with Inured by Hunger. Gives you a nice, easy way to get more hunger counters.
Yeah. All right. Since I've got more of them here, I wanted to mention Silent Shield.
Yep.
It was one of the this is the first silent relic that didn't have a reaction, right? Specifically.
No, I don't think the sword has a reaction.
Oh, you're right.
It just gives you an effect if you're in no one's territory, which I think is the same thing with the shield.
Yeah. I guess what I was wrong about is this one doesn't have. Oh, it does have. So you're on guard if you have three or more silent relics, which is weird. So like this one and the helm are three or more silent relics. All the other ones are two or more silent relics.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay that they did that. I'm a little surprised that they did that. It's a little more bookkeeping to double check. Like, I'm going to start triggering some of these. So this, you become a quarry and you get two defense if you're in no one's territory. So this is, as silent relics go, this is pretty far down because it's, the chances that you are actually in no one's territory. I mean, two block is pretty good, but it's a very limited part of the battlefield where you're going to benefit from it. Being on guard is often great, but having three silent relics is a tall thing. So I think this feels like a silent relic that you're only including if you are really leaning into, I want to have a lot of things to turn people into quarry. Or I really want to be able to unlock the abilities of other silent relics. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I do. I think this is the weakest one we've seen so far. There's almost no reason to have it unless you're going to be stacking silent relics. So, I was a little surprised when I saw this one. It's sort of like, shouldn't there be something else?
Yeah.
Because like, if you're not in no one's territory and you don't have three stacked, this upgrade just makes you a quarry.
Yeah.
That being said, though, sort of a joking here, but maybe if it comes back into vogue, the alternate play style for the like Cataphrine relic thing, the like basically King of the Hill, if that were to come back and become like a real thing, this suddenly looks very appealing, because that token is always in no one's territory.
All right. You heard it here first. If Cataphrine relic play comes,
you know.
Yeah.
So I personally think that having more ways to play the game is probably good. I know that it's not really the way that the community has gone because everything is just standard championship format. But it makes deck building predictable.
Mm.
Right?
Sure.
Whereas if you're playing Vanguard or if you're playing an alternate style format, all of a sudden it unlocks a whole bunch of different sets of cards. And like, this would be one of those. So this is not in any way like a super strong card. I guess as a plug for maybe thinking about other play styles, as we start to crawl our way back towards, real tournaments.
Yeah.
It's just something to think about.
Fair. What else you got?
So I had Silent Relics on my list, and I did want to talk about the other one. And so the other one that's included here is the Silent Sword. And these two kind of go together, right? Because the sword itself is actually pretty good. It makes you a quarry as normal. It's the normal sword profile on the weapon attack. So 3 smash, 2 damage, which is always decent.
Yeah.
Because that accuracy is pretty good. That's better than most fighters' attacks. But if you are in no one's territory, you do get +1 damage. So 3 smash, 3 damage is all of a sudden pretty scary. So if you have ways of just engineering your attack to happen while you're in no one's territory, this can be pretty scary.
Well,
and if you do happen to have two stacked together, this does get Ensnare.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it even more accurate. So if you want a super accurate equipped weapon, this is your jam.
And here's the thing is we just kind of poo-pooed Silent Shield only giving its defense bonus if you are in no one's territory. But that's because you've got to stand in there. And sure, you have to do the same with Silent Sword, but because it's an attack action, because you're offensive with that, you're essentially affecting, like, your target can be anywhere that's in no one's territory or one hex away from no one's territory, right? Like, yep. you can charge in there. So if you place your objectives, you know, one out from no one's territory, then all of a sudden you have, it's more likely, you know, as much competition as there are over objectives these days, you're increasing the likelihood that you're going to have that ability to go after somebody with a 3 smash, 3 damage attack, which is a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, just throw Mighty Swing in there. Why not? The ultimate combo.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we're now up to what? 4 silent relics?
I believe 5? That's correct.
Ring, armor, shield, sword, helm, 5.
Oh, yep.
So,
and presumably we'll get one with the Eidneth when they drop
all 6.
Yeah.
And then hopefully some sort of awesome, like, stack all 6 and then become like the ultimate warrior.
I mean, honestly, I'd be happy if we didn't, right? Like, it'd be cool, cuz we've had a lot of things that were that benefits you for getting all of them, but it's neat to, like, look at what the situation is if you only have some. I mean, I guess that was a deal with Cataphrane relics, but if they're good enough, they don't have to have a payoff that is in the form of an objective or you know, something else that gets you glory for them. So
I don't really care either way. It would just fit the pattern, and then it would be kind of this fun thing of, like, I'm gonna put all the silent relics on one fighter and 6 upgrades to get something. Don't know what that would be, but be pretty awesome. I guess, I don't know. So that's a weapon upgrade. There is one other, or maybe a couple other weapon upgrades that we had included here. Do you want to talk about any of those?
Yeah, so I flagged Soultooth Net. We talked some about Extruded Snare on our last episode and Barblade Net. So this is, even though Extruded Snare doesn't technically have net in the name, I think everyone's been calling them the 3 nets.
That's because they are.
So this is, it turns you into a hunter like everything else Soultooth. Like everything else Soultooth, you get to reroll 1 dice in the attack roll if the target has 1 or more move and or charge tokens. It is 2 range, which is nice. 3 fury, 1 damage. If you land it, you're going to give him a charge token. And after you make this successful or not, after you make this attack action, you're going to discard this. I think these are really cool tools to have in there, and they become more important the more prevalent the Molags of the world, or even, you know, again, shout out to Benji and his crew on Tabletop Sydney. But sometimes the crushes, they'll really power up one guy who will try and surf around and do a ridiculous amount of damage. If you can lay a charge token on one of those, these become real powerful. This one, because of its limited range, because the reroll only comes into play if it has a move or charge token already, in which case you don't care as much about giving them a charge token, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, hit or miss, it's gone. This feels to me, and I could be wrong about this, but it feels to me like the least useful of the set. Although the picture is amazing.
I would agree with that. I think this weapon action is, I mean, it's just some anti-synergy, right? Which is always going to make something seem less useful to me. I guess the one caveat is Molag. If he's moved once and thinks he's going to get to do some more stuff, and then you throw Soultooth Net on him and lock him down. But
It's tough to figure out, like, how much do you have to worry about facing Molag, because I think people are a little burned out on him. So you don't see a lot of Molag out there right now. You know, there's a little bit of a stigma around playing him.
I think if there was glass on the line, you'd probably see
that's
him.
Exactly what I'm saying is, like, I think you get used to maybe not seeing them as much. And then I wonder if once, like you say, once glass is on the line, like once we see a clash coming around, how many Molags do we see come back out? Like, how many people are training up on them in secret? In which case, like, giving that charge token is a big deal, which trumps this over Extruded Snare, which only gives a move. And if you're a warband that doesn't have hunters, then you don't have barblade and net available to you. So when I say it's the weakest of the three, I'm generalizing. It may still be your best choice, depending on what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
You had another weapon. What was your weapon?
Yeah. So I really like this one. Just almost purely from the design space, but it's the Wicked Lash.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a 2-reach weapon upgrade that base is pretty bad. It's 2 swords for 1 damage, which if that's all this was, no one would ever take it. But
range 2, but yeah.
Yeah, but for I'm super inaccurate. But if your fighter has 1 or more wound counters, this attack action gets +1 dice and +1 damage. And if your target has 1 or more wound counters, this attack gets +1 dice and +1 damage.
Mm-hmm.
So at like, if you're just wounded already and you're using this, it just bumps it up to a 3 fury, 2 damage attack at range 2, which is already, that's great. If you have a way to sort of maneuver this where you're going to get both of these effects to be happening and with some, you know, more often than not, this is suddenly like a really scary attack where you're 4 dice for 3 damage,
yeah,
before any other sort of upgrades happen,
right,
which would make it one of the best weapon upgrades in the game. If you have a way of just making this happen, I don't know that there's enough ping damage right now to make this super reliable, but like even just charging a fighter through a lethal to get bonus accuracy and damage doesn't seem like a horrible idea to me.
Right.
And if you know you're going to have to land multiple hits on your opponents to bring them down, then all of a sudden this is pretty, pretty juicy stuff.
Yeah. This feels like, I mean, it has Dread Pageant pictured on it, and it feels like Dread Pageant likes it because they are, you know, they have some in-faction ping. They like, yep, the ping. If they're working towards the Inspire, they will sometimes wound themselves in order to get closer to that Inspire, you know, the reactions that you have on Vasilak and Slake Slash. It feels like if anyone is going to really leverage this, it might be them. And I will say I've played some games where Slake Slash did have a range 2 weapon, and with some of the upgrades and his built-in reaction to heal and otherwise, it gets pretty nuts. I don't think you can just pick it up with anybody, but I think if in the right warband, this is a pretty crazy card.
Yeah. I do think there's maybe a shout out here for like weapon Spikeclaw Swarm or ghouls, just because you could put this on a fighter that you know you can always get back.
Sure.
So you can situationally just
keep charging them through lethals.
On somebody. Well, I mean, you could do that, or you, just knowing that the weapon's always going to be there when you need it. I don't know, but I like it. I think this is a unique sort of weapon design that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, for sure. I had mentioned Spikeglass, and this is an upgrade reaction after an attack action that targets this fighter. Pick one of the attacker's upgrades, discard that card and this card. So this is yet another along the lines of Acidic Strike and, mm-hmm, I think Narrowing Passage,
Shattering Scream.
Yep. That peel off upgrades. We're starting to get a lot of them, and you can kind of pick which one works best for you. So, if you're a warband where most people are going to get one-shotted, a Spyglass is not for you, because if you're not alive, you're not going to be able to use this reaction. If you are somebody who's going to have a big beefy guy, then this becomes a much bigger deal. And it's nice to have on there as like a, as something that dissuades people from attacking you potentially. Importantly, like we've seen a similar effect before in Night Vault, but this one, you don't have to be damaged. They just have to have attempted to attack you. Right. So even if it's a failed attack, you're still going to be able to blow up one of their upgrades. It's hard for me to say. I don't know that you will necessarily see a lot of this. But I think in certain builds you might, So it's cool. I like that there is a suite of cards here. Pick the one that works best for your warband to potentially remove upgrades from different fighters. And removing upgrades, because the fighters that benefit the most from upgrades, even something like Great Strength, are the ones that get to live the longest or activate the most. So the Molochs, the Hrothgorns, et cetera, then cards that remove the upgrades, strictly speaking, are most powerful against those fighters. So I think that's this is almost like an anti big guy card, almost.
Yeah. Yeah. A little hard to pull off, I think, against big guys, just because you do have to live through the attack. But
fair. Good point.
If they miss you, I mean, that's also the thing. I was actually just thinking, from having built that Reapers deck not too long ago, they've got their in-faction -1 dice to range one attacks for people next to them. And so, like, you stack this and that on Kanan, and it's just kind of like, yeah, maybe I'll just not.
Not going to bother. Yeah, gosh, Kanan, what a beast. I was like, yeah. I'm just going to ignore him. There's only so much he can do. Well, there's a lot he can do.
The reach, too, makes us for some pretty gnarly situations.
Yeah, that's a good point, though, as far as anti-big guy thing. Like, you have to survive the attack, and a lot of times they've got so much stuff on them that they're hitting very accurately and very hard. But
yep.
Occupying the after an attack action area is a pretty important spot too. So
it is always
this,
good.
This is, I mean, throughout the big guys, this is an anti-Rippa, right? Like,
oh yeah,
he comes in, tries to get you. Say, not only are you not going to bite me with your wolf jaws, but you are not going to have one of your upgrades. So,
oof, yeah, and that loaded for plunder is gonna
exactly
gonna cry real hard when he can't stack the upgrades.
Did you have anything else you wanted to cover?
That pretty much was everything that jumped out at me.
All right.
And I mean, we covered probably about half of both sets. So
yeah, I think so.
Feels pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a good chunk of stuff.
Like I was saying earlier, like it's a fun place to be in, to be like, I don't remember all the cards that are available to me. So deck building has been very interesting of late. So
yeah,
it's that thing where like just scrolling through the cards, sometimes you get to a point where I've built enough decks with the available cards to me that I know exactly what's out there. And here, like idly scrolling through cards, I'll come upon, like, oh, I forgot about that one. Or like, yeah. I remember that one, but I didn't remember it did this thing. And it's been very fun to build decks. It's made it take a lot longer, but
that's all right.
Yeah.
Oh man. I think in that vein, we're probably going to have to do some sort of a recap to say like, so where are we? Like, where have we landed now that Dire Chasm is basically done? Like,
yeah.
Because honestly, I couldn't even answer that question right now.
I think we do a season wrap up. We got one more warband. We'll cover that once they drop. We'll do some more catch up on some other faction reviews, and then I think a Dire Chasm. Where do we stand now? Hopefully, we stand somewhere that has an FAQ.
gotta hope. Right? Yeah. You can't go a whole season without something.
Right, exactly. That's it. Well, thanks for listening. Do you have any other thoughts here before we
let's wrap it up?
All right, let's do it. Thank you. Thank you all of you for listening, taking the time. We are going to be making some shifts. I'd like to try to move us to a more regular release schedule. Right now we've been ironically, after our huge hiatus, probably releasing more frequently than we did in the past. But we used to come at you regularly on every second Monday morning, every other Monday morning. I'd like to try and get back to that little bit of predictability. So we'll be making some shifts as we go there. We got some more cleanup to do with this crazy season, such as it's been. If you have thoughts on that or anything else that we talked about, if you think we got it wrong on some of these or missed something that your favorite gambit or upgrade, let us know. You can get us at WTHcast or whatthexcast@gmail.com. You can check out our content at themortalrealms.com. Like Phil was saying, he's guested on a couple of the story phases. I was on the Slaanesh episode a little while ago. Phil's been helping out with some of the Broken Realms and then the Soulblight Gravelords. And if you really want to know some more about the background of Underworlds, I think episode 34 of the story phase of the Mortal Realms, we talked about the novel, The Mirrored City by Josh Reynolds, which is excellent and talks about the background of Shadespire. I highly recommend that, either reading it or listening to the episode or both. We have coming up, we're not sure. We're going to see where the winds take us. We'll either give you one of these faction reviews, cover the Mad Mob or the Reapers if we've got enough reps in where we feel like we can talk about them from an educated perspective, or the starter box, or maybe, gosh, even who knows, like the Eidneth are probably going to drop tomorrow or something, like the way they go. So that's it. But we really appreciate you listening. We have a Discord. You can jump on and chat. We got a great community there, very supportive, really nice bit of serenity and humor every time I want to hop on there. We have a Patreon if you want to support us that way, or you can just review us, or you can just listen to us, because that's been awesome. And thank you for doing that. Your recommend listening for this episode is going to be Silent Signs. It's by DeYarmin Edison. And with that, for What the Hex, I've been Davey.
And this is Phil. Well, so I did have silent relics just as a like thing, not specific just to one or the other, but I did have that on my list. So I suppose the other one that was here was the sword, I believe, right? Yeah. No, that is that right? I'm trying to remember. I'm going to go find that here quick. Because I do want to talk about it. And I forgot to pull it up. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. But if we just look at upgrades and scroll down to S, it is the sword. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Boosh. Oh, yeah. I was going to tell people I finally got around to updating the playlist that I'm sure nobody listens to. But
you never know.
Yeah. Never do. Actually, it does have a lot more listens than I would have expected. So, and by a lot, I mean more than double digits. So,
hey, I mean,
yeah, who knows,
just a Spotify pod like playlist, or
yeah, just, and like the only place it's ever been linked is on one episode, I think, is all I remembered to link to it,
but yeah, wow, there's those algorithms finding people for you.
Yeah, I guess so.